me sini.
My name is Latanya Odin. I'm here with Edith Naviak on November 1st, 2005. We're at the university. Edith, I'm interested in knowing about your religious background, if you're comfortable talking to me about that, your religion and the spirituality of you and your culture and your community.
Okay.
So why don't we talk about when you were younger? Were your parents, did they go to church?
Yes, they did.
What church?
Presbyterian Church.
Did you attend?
Yes, I did. We had to attend.
You were born in Tektovik?
Mm-hmm. I remember it was really blowing snow and I was a little girl. I must have been in the back of my mom because our grandfather is a lay preacher. And so I remember Tektovik at that time and still does. Because it had a really bad storm just recently. And it was really windy and you couldn't see anything. You couldn't even see right next door. You couldn't see anything. So I remember our grandfather or our dad, they tied these people together with ropes and they went to church. So there was a lot of dedication in this a good spirit side, the church. I grew up in the church. Our grandfather was a lay preacher. He was one of the first students to go to school. Our grandfather Andrew Akuchuk. His mom had died and so he was the oldest brother, Diviluk, decided it was very important that he should go to school. I think that was a time when, you know, there were other people coming around and they couldn't understand them, so he said, you have to go to school. There's a school now opening up in Barrow, so he allowed him to. He was about 12 years old. He said, you have to go to school, and so he did. So he learned how to translate the Bible from English to in Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I have been brought up in a religious background, and there's a difference between religion and spirituality, a big difference. Religion is Presbyterian, Catholic, whatever church is, it's organized. And I'm not against religion. I do go to church regularly. But spirituality is a way of life. We've lived it so many years. Even before white man came, we respected the land, the animals, respected each other and took care of the poor and whom it's the same philosophy as when the missionaries came. We found out, oh okay, that was our way of life, we lived it. Do not steal. We were very trustworthy, I think. At those times, we didn't even have to worry about losing something. Because we had good upbringing. We didn't steal, we didn't lie. we didn't hurt people. We're supposed to be kind, help the poor, feed the poor, and our dad, he raised us well. He had a high belief. He really believed in a higher power, in God. He had a lot of wisdom and knowledge to share. He was a healer. He relied on God for his wisdom and knowledge on how to manipulate the babies. When mothers come in overdue for their baby to be born, they come in and he knew how to manipulate the babies and also also knew how to take the baby's cord from his or her neck. So growing up, yep, we had Presbyterians when we moved. Our dad moved the whole family from Cocktory to Barrow, and that's where we were raised. I was about 8 years old when we moved to Barrow. So there were Presbyterians in the church and Polo Cross bearers regularly attended those until we became older and joined the West Ministries Fellowship. So we really grew up in a church that we lived it, I think. We just automatically depended on it. Not depend on it, we had no qualms about going to church. Even today, I remember moving to Wisconsin and I still need to go to a Jewish church. I went to a black church, I went to the different kinds of churches that they had. And you follow the Spirit. I go to the churches, and if I don't feel it, then I go and find where the Spirit is. So yeah, we were brought up with religion, with a good spirit.
And so when you were in Barrow, you went to a Presbyterian church there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And still do today.
How did you?
Born Presbyterian. Democrat. Yeah.
So then I was wondering, what school? Was there a Presbyterian mission that your grandparents went to, or did you go to a mission school?
No.
No, it was a public school?
It was a public school. It was already established, and I remember being a third grader, and I would be teachers in third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh.
Mm.
And going to Randall Institute for the eighth grade class, and then high school was managed from ninth through the 12th. After I graduated.
Into my education?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you said that your grandfather went to school.
Mm-hmm.
Did he go to a public school?
It might have been a missionary school before they built that public school. Because I remember the late Dr. Harold Kaviluka went to Mountain Village. There was a school there, but I don't know whether it was a public school or a mission school. Because the first schools were, I think, mission.
mission schools.
And what about your spirituality? You said that your father was a really spiritual man, and mm-hmm. do you think that's where you learned how to be spiritual, or is that something that you learned? Is that something from your culture?
The spiritual essence of our Inupiaq culture did not come from the missionaries. Like I said, we had already lifted even before they came. We respected the land, the animals, and everything around us. And, when I hear stories from the elders, oh, they have a name for him, and you know, the spirit. And they say, oh, God. Also, that's when they found out the name for God. They've always sensed that spirit. Even when we do the Eskimo dances, it's just a healing process. Preet Suwalik, one of the prominent Eskimo dancers in the North Slope, always wanted to have an Eskimo dance after they buried somebody. It uplifts the spirit. There's a healing sense, healing spirit within our Eskimo dances. So, it's everywhere. I remember our dad saying you have to pray every second of the minute, and being young and foolish, I used to think, who could ever pray every minute of the second? Being young and foolish, I always used to think, and now that I'm 58 years old, I know what he meant. You have to be aware of that higher power, that supreme power within the universe, and be aware that he is in charge.
In what ways do you see that, like you said that in dances there's that spirituality, that healing after someone passes, and what other ways do you see the spirituality of your culture in your traditions?
In the traditions? In what other ways? There's Eskimo dances and telling stories.
Are there specific stories?
Not specific stories, just sharing. Because within our family, the Akuchuk family, there's a miracle, amazing stories that they tell. What happens, like they can catch anything, caribou or whatever, and they rely on the higher power and pray and whatnot, and sure enough they are able to catch that animal. And I was just recently I was staying over at my sister's place, and one of our uncles came and he started telling stories, and I turned on the recorder, and he said he prayed that the animal, the caribou, won't hear him or hear him come up or whatever. And he said, sure enough, the caribou couldn't hear him come up or see him. Yeah, don't let the caribou hear me or see me. And he did that, and it just like when he talks about it, it's just like, wow, you know, he has so much faith. He could ask God to do that, and God does that for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've always relied on God in our family, ever since I can remember being small. So, it never leaves us. We being foolish human beings, we leave Him. We quit being centered, we quit praying, we quit asking Him, get addicted to alcohol or drugs and completely get out of Him, but He doesn't leave us. He protects us and our parents were praying parents, and when I look back, yes, we would have been in a really terrible, fatal accident, but by the prayers of our parents, we were protected. I remember going to school in California and drinking and driving and this and that, and near Mrs. It wasn't luck, it was just we were under the prayers of our parents, and I do that now with my children. So it's from generation to generation, and we learn to rely on our God, the one God.
Would you say that during, just tell me if I'm not comfortable talking about it, but would you say that during the times that you were drinking that you weren't very spiritual, or you were having a hard time?
I was out of it. I didn't have any conscience. I didn't care. I didn't care how many people I hurt. That's living bad, you know. No conscience at all of what I'm doing. And just a zombie. That wasn't a good life at all.
I think that your story about drinking is something that a lot of people can learn from. And so if you feel comfortable sharing about your trials through that and how you came about not drinking anymore.
I remember, well, I started drinking when I was about 15 years old, and I didn't stop. I kept drinking and drinking and drinking, and I met my husband by drinking, my ex-husband, and so 1980, I was so sick and tired of drinking and doing drugs, just crying on the floor. I think I was by myself. I don't know. I don't even know where my kids were, but I think they were with my mom or somebody. I can't remember. But I remember being alone in my apartment, in my, eightplex apartment where we were renting from the North Lobo, and just sick and tired and just crying, wanting to stop. And it took me like 17 years to. It was a gradual process for me. I didn't go into a program, and I went straight to the church. But there was a lot of anger, a lot of rage in me, which I needed to, and there was a lot of secrets that I needed to reveal or tell somebody. And I think that's one of the things that people need to know, is that I'm not against the church. I think it's an excellent way of worshiping God and, you know, in the spirit. And if you do quit drinking, you need to have therapy, some clinician to help you through your process of sobering up, because there was a lot of anger and rage, and I was wondering what the heck's wrong with me anyway. I was just one basket case. Thank God I had a partner who, my soulmate, who direct me to the right people, to see therapists and clinicians and go to the meetings, go to the AA meetings. That's what kept me from drinking, was to share and go to the AA meetings, and also at the same time keeping in balance. Because I remember being sober all of a sudden, from being sober all of a sudden, A to Z to the church, and I went back out drinking. I continually came back out drinking, and the only way that I quit drinking was through the AA program and keeping in balance, not in excess, not total AA, not total church, not total therapists. It's a matter of common sense and keeping in balance. Going to church and then using the right resources and resting, taking care of myself. And because I was a people pleaser, I took care of everybody else around me except myself. And that's my journey. You have to learn to say no. And we are such excellent caretakers. We care so much, we have so much compassion for children. Because, like earlier I said, I had been violated as a child, and that really gave me the survival skills of being independent, and, but at the same time being stubborn and go away, I don't need your help, I can do it myself. And we have to look at them as survival skills. We can no longer burden the shame and guilt. We have to put it back where it should be, to the person who violated us. Roll it up in a ball and throw it back at that person, because we were innocent children. So that I remember when I first started talking about it, I felt so much load off my back. Because I think that's where, when I look at the world, oh my God, there's, you know, all this stuff that's happening with that little girl. And I was like, how can, and when I asked that question, why do they do that, and it just, I know why. They haven't told somebody about what happened to them when they were kids, and they continue to be promiscuous and drinking and doing drugs and no shame, you know. They're just in that revolving door where they abuse themselves. So the only thing that helped me also, I think I should rely, I mean, I should give the credit to our God, the God that I understand. We don't shove God down anybody's throat in the AA program. We allow them to find Him themselves. Because I think that's where the religion make the mistake of trying to force everybody to believe in God. Don't smoke, don't drink, don't do this, don't do that. And it just when you start telling people that, it's just like, oh, I don't need that, you know? I don't need your religion. So, just allowing somebody to make their own mistakes. Because when we try and stop somebody else to stop drinking or doing drugs, then we're enabling them. If we, or frustrating the heck out of them if we say, don't drink, and they do it anyway. You know, it's unnecessary. Like that poem to God, like, I want to be able to understand, not to be understood. Something, I don't know, it's that, I like that, it's in that program, the AA program. And that's where all my reassurances and support came from friends like Lois, who I said earlier, learn to listen, listen to learn. So the slogans, easy does it. Let go and let God. Because we have the tendency to, because we have that survival skill, like I can do it myself, I don't need anybody. I had a heck of a time trying to ask for help for a while. For a long time I couldn't ask, like, can you please help me? And I'm learning, and learning how to say no, I'm tired, I can't take care of the child. Or, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to go to the meeting. Or, I don't want to go to that event because I'm tired, I want to take care of myself. You know, you have to learn to say no. So, keeping things in perspective and in balance instead of from A to Z. You know, you have to, and you have to do something that makes you feel good. Go to an Eskimo dance, or go to a carnival, or go to Disneyland. Something that makes you feel good, makes you happy. Involve your family, be with your family.
In terms of your spirituality, like, and that helped you to not drink and helped you to be a better person, I was also wondering about the overall community, culture, spirituality, like elders that, if there's specific instances where, like elders on St. Lawrence Island, for instance, when they catch a whale, you know, everything else, they use everything and then, you know, they pray for thankfulness and those sorts of things.
They do that at home.
Yeah. Okay.
Just recently in September there was a good season of whaling.
Oh, good.
The fall whaling.
Oh, good.
You could hear somebody like on the VHF, you could hear, oh, somebody's got, you know, they harpooned a whale, they shot a whale, and so you wait. And you wait, and you wait for that captain to start praying, or whoever is designated to pray to God and say, thank you, God, for the blessings that you have given us. And then after they say, amen, woo! And they have to bring up the whale and There's a flag on top of the house, the captain's house, and the wife got all her helpers and daughters and sons and crew members, wives, and everybody cooking, and it's a beautiful spiritual essence of our culture.
Mm.
Whaling is a spiritual essence of our culture. Anything that we get from the land, from the sea, we share it, we give it to people, and God provides us, you know, tenfold. It comes back if we share. There's a true story about being stingy. One man had taken this seller from, his daughter had married a prominent hunter, a poor prominent hunter, but he knew how to hunt them, and that's why he got them to get married, one of his oldest daughters, and then he died. So he claimed the seller for the meat and everything, the foodies.
Oh, the husband died?
Yeah. His daughter's husband died. So that was his property, so he claimed it. And he padlocked it. So he had a sister and grandmother. Poor, very poor family. They needed the food and they couldn't get into the ice cellar to get food. He claimed it himself. He didn't share. He was stingy. And one of my aunt's friends came over to me and said, come on, you gotta see this. You gotta go, come on. And so she went over and there were little teeny those bugs all over the cellar. And so they couldn't get into the food. After that, you cannot eat the food. My aunt said they would come out at night with lots of bugs, those white whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would be gone during the day, but at night it just like engulfed the whole cellar and the ground. So there's a moral story, whatever, you know. Never be stingy. You're supposed to share. There's a higher being that caused things to happen like that. And sure enough, that's what happened. My family lost that cellar. I don't think they used it again. I don't think they ever used it again.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a spiritual foundation of being kind and do not steal, do not lie, and all this good things you're supposed to do to people instead of being violent and abusive and hurting and drinking and doing drugs and, you know, common sense. Lead a good life. Help other people. But like I said, balance. Don't overdo anything. Learn how to say no. Take good care of yourself. Rest good.
And is there anything else that you'd like to share? About anything that I've asked about? Or any other stories?
About religion and spirituality. spirituality.
And the community and the culture.
Community. Thank God we still do the Christmas pageants. I'm still involved in the church. I'm starting to, because sometimes you get turned off by people in the church, because there's personality differences and whatnot, and then you say, okay, I'm not going to go there anymore. I'm not going to go to that church if that guy's going to be obnoxious, you know? And I have come to realize what am I doing anyway? I'm there to worship God, not to win a personality contest, you know? I think that's how we should approach a church of God, not a church for people who run the door, you know? Because sometimes I think they tend to do that. Some churches tend to say, this is my church. Mm-hmm. This is mine. I said, golly, wake up. That's not your church. It doesn't belong to you. It's God's church. So learning how to live together as human beings with different personalities and character defects. I think that's what the AA program has taught me, is that there'll always be people who are obnoxious and people who are shy, people who are outspoken, people who irk the heck out of you. You know, anywhere, at the store, at the church, this country, that country. So how would you like to be treated? Then treat that person the way you want to be treated. Unless you have a sense of remorse, because there's the other side where no remorse, and it's scary. Some people turn to the other side. They have no more conscience, no remorse, and no guilt, no shame. And but like it says, we receive the same rain, we receive the same snow that comes down on everybody. Who are we to condemn? Who are we to say, maybe the people that we are talking about? Gossiping. I hate gossiping. Mm. I don't like to be among people who talk about other people. It hurts. It says a lot about you if you start talking about somebody else and downgrading them. And you think, okay, what about you? You know, I'd like to go over there and say, okay. Let's talk about you, okay? Instead of, okay, let's talk about you. Hey, that's a good idea.
That is.
Yeah, if they start talking about somebody, say, okay, let's talk about you. That'll really shut them up. That really, it's like at home, there's five different stories of one event, and you know which, you don't know which one to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So go to the source, go to the person, you know, instead of talking about this happening, why don't you get the facts? Don't believe everything that you hear.
Is there anything?
Religion and spirituality. I'd like to acknowledge my parents and my grandfather for giving me that opportunity to grow up in a church. And always being there for me, our dad, our mom. I think that's what kept us grounded with the fact that we had these upbringings of not stealing, not lying, and all these things that we're not supposed to do. Because I remember we were picking on a white kid that just came in, and we were all total inebriates in the classroom, and we picked on him, and our dad found out about it. He was really furious. He was upset what we did to that poor kid. I don't even know whose kid that was. He was different. He was white. So he said, we have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth. And I think that's when I quit seeing color differences. Whether you're a white, black, Indian, or a person from India, or an Indian, or Yupik, or Athabaskan, or Tlingit, or Tsimshian, or we don't see color as a family. We've never but to be truthful, for some reason I just like I never told anybody, but they know my family knows. I shared it with some of my siblings. In the back of my mind, I don't know, maybe because of TV or influence, TV influence or something, I didn't like Mexicans. And guess what? I have a Mexican, Mexican Eskimo part Indian. Grandchild. Yeah, that really melted that prejudice. And same goes for my brother. He didn't like Filipinos. He ended up with a Filipino grandchild. God has such a good sense of humor to work on us. He does. Oh, he loves them so much. I mean, it just blows away that prejudice. Oh, yeah, life is an education. Your whole life is an education. You learn every day. Yeah. It's a gift. It's a gift from God. So I have one last thing. I'm open. I don't have a closed mind anymore. I accept people of all kinds. I used to be squirmy about different kinds of people or whatever in my life. and that's done with. And I remember reading Gandhi, and so I want to share something before we leave. It's by Nelson Mandela. Do you remember Nelson Mandela?
Mm-hmm.
He's the president now for the Republic of South Africa. This is from his 1994 inaugural speech. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond nature. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were born to manifest the glory of God within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm.
As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others.
Mm.
That's powerful. Isn't that awesome?
It is, yeah.
Nelson Mandela. I got this one. Actually, I translated it because my Jeffries, who is a judge at home,
mm.
he's a, what do you call it, an inebriate.
Mm-hmm.
In a white man body. They got married there and they raised their kids there and they're forever. I mean, they're there. They live there. He was doing the Wednesday night service, which I go to every Wednesday when I can. He read this, and so I translated his sermon, whatever. I had a chance to just let everybody know in Inuberg, I said, wow! When we translate something into Inuberg, it's just like it becomes more richer, more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa! So, that's it.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
My name is Latanya Odin. I'm with Edith Nagyak from Barrow. Again, we're going to talk about values, Inupiaq values, and what she wants to pass on to young people. So Edith, what do you remember from growing up? What are some of the values that you were taught?
That we were taught?
Okay.
Our parents had always been honest and never stole. I've never known my dad to lie. They had the natural ability, and we saw it, to feed the poor and to work a lot, not to be idle or lazy. Our dad was a prominent hunter, and mom always provided the warm clothes for him, like sewing. She sewed a lot. And so children learn what they live. And I always I'm always so grateful that I had a father who instilled in us honesty and integrity and having a good conscience, you know. It was always shown to us about not stealing, and of course they would tell us not to take anything that doesn't belong to us, and also one of the things that I want the young people to know, there's no room for prejudice. One time when we were in grade school, we picked on a white kid, and our parents found out about it, and we got scolded. And one of the things that always stuck to me was that we have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth, everybody in this world. And ever since that time, I've never seen color at all. We don't see color. And the things that I do want to pass on to the young people, and those that were given to me by my parents, and also overall, the Inupiaq values, definitely tell or show us or let us know, oh yeah, I remember my dad saying that, or, you know. So, the Inupiaq values are, which means respect. Respect for elders, others, and nature. Udukkananin, allanin, inyuniyagin. Respect for elders, others, and nature. Every one of you will get a copy of this before I leave. Ilagiginik, that's family kinship and roles. And siginatainik is sharing, which I'm pretty sure with helping poor people and sharing food, making sure, that's why I think I always feel funny when I'm eating alone when there's people around me. Always have to feed people when they come into your home. Sharing anything that, one time, just recently this year, I went to my niece, and I went there inside, and I had a little jar or something, and I said, I came here too. I ran out of sugar, I want some sugar. And she was so happy. They did that a long time ago, sharing, you know? And if she didn't have something, she would go next door to me and say, I want salt. I ran out of salt, or I want sugar, or I want, do you have any? And say, yeah, sure, I have some. And I think that's one of the things that we need to teach our young people. Don't be afraid, don't be too proud to go next door and ask for something. And she was so tickled, she was so happy and started laughing. And said, oh my God, that's what our parents did, that's what our ancestors did a long time ago. And we were both happy for doing that, asking for sugar. That was so good. So we need to do that often. Or don't be afraid to ask for help. Young people, if you're listening, do not be afraid to say, I need help. Teacher, I need help. Counselor, I need help. A friend, I need somebody to talk to. I got something that's really bothering me in my mind. Something happened, I need for you to listen, you know. Young people need to learn to share their feelings and never keep it bottled up inside. It's going to affect them in the years to come when they're adults. And I think that's what I really like that program where they teach the children yell and tell somebody, or if somebody's trying to violate you or whatever, they teach them, I'm gonna tell, and that's good. Mm. I'm gonna tell somebody, and run away and tell somebody. So that's a good thing for young people to hear, is that they shouldn't have to be ashamed or guilty or anything. They can tell somebody. If they're afraid to tell their mom and dad, they could tell a teacher or somebody they feel comfortable talking to. And Inupiralanik, for us, it's knowledge of language, knowledge of Inupiaq language, Inupiralanik, that means Inupiralanik is learning how to speak in Eskimo. Inupiralanik, that's the meaning of it, but the values in itself, knowledge of language, is a really good translation, that Inupiralanik, knowledge of language. And Pamariginik, cooperation. That's the only way they are successful in whaling. They cooperate. Pamariginik, that's cooperation and helping each other, and not just watching somebody, you know, if they need help, help them. Pama, Pama, Reiknik. Pikpakutikaranik, love and respect for one another. And foremost, respect for self. And that way, if you respect yourself, then you respect other people, elders, others, nature, and all your friends, your mom, your dad, your siblings, your relatives, or other people, respecting other people. Pekpakutikaranik, love for one another. Kuvenronik, that's humor, ability to laugh, to have fun. Kuvenronik, and we did that this afternoon with the Eskimo dancing. that's something the young people need to learn, to have real fun. Instead of don't get into drugs because it's false. Happiness. Don't get too drunk. Don't drink excessively, it's false. Real joy is respecting yourself and just having a good time without drugs or alcohol. Yeah. I'm in there on it. Hunting traditions. I'm in there on it. Learn how to hunt, ask questions. If you don't know, ask your uncle, your aunt, your grandmother, anybody that might know about hunting. I'm in there on it. And Nagalikutakaranik, compassion. Nagalikutakaranik is not just watching somebody be hungry, or if you know of somebody that's in need of food or whatever, you have that compassion to go and help them. Unknowingly or knowingly, whatever, just reach out and help them. And communion, humility, it's something sometimes we have a hard time with. We have to be humble enough to sometimes be quiet. Like if you hear something like gossiping or whatever, you do not tell somebody else about it. Like, I heard so and so talking about you, and they said that's not right. Humility is being able to be humble, and even if you hear things like that about other people, you have respect for that person who they're talking about, and just not say anything. And humility is if somebody tries to take you angry and upset and just makes no sense, you just walk away. And I said, it's your problem. You're the one who's angry. I don't want to get into that dysfunction, that yelling or anger or whatever. Deal with it yourself and come back when you feel bad. Instead of, like, we have that tendency to, like, oh man, really, you know, get into that dysfunction, that chaos. So, and Pahlaktao Dainyak is avoidance of conflict.
This is Latanya Odin and Edith Nagyak. We're continuing our interview from the reverse side of this tape.
Okay, thank you. Avoidance of conflict, Bakhlaktaudanyak. Don't look for trouble. Don't be involved in gossiping, character assassination, it doesn't make you feel good. I hate gossiping, and if I do, I just not share it with that person they're talking about. It's something that I learned from my mom. You just don't do that. They call it that means don't tell on somebody. And foremost, the best thing is for you to avoid participating in gossiping. Avoid participating in scheming to hurt somebody. Just common sense, you know, avoiding fight or argument or yelling or just earlier I said, it's your feelings, you are so angry, I don't want to be around with you when you're that way. Come back when you're feeling better.
Mm.
And Okpekotekanak, that's spirituality. Okpekotekanak is having a belief in something. We don't force anybody to believe in what we believe in. Spirituality. Ukpekotekanak is believing, I think, believe in something, believe in God. Ukpekotekanak is having faith. So they are together. Believing in our higher power or the Creator or however they want to refer to the Creator. You know, we refer him to our Father, our Abba, Abba, Kabim, in our language. It's somebody who created us, and the one who created the animals so that we could hunt, and who created the land so that we can take care of ourselves. It's all divinely designed. And one of the things that I do want to pass on to the young people is to learn living skills. You go to school, you go to college, and that's wonderful, that is awesome. I'm really proud of you pursuing that. But you have to have that ability to get along with everybody. If not, it doesn't work when you have that. When you want to control people, when you have that anger and gossiping, and you bring it to the workforce, and that's not the way we were taught. Wherever we go to work, wherever we are going to school, the values are applied wherever you go, especially in a setting like this. I sense a really good spirit in this university. Everybody's respectful of each other and they're learning. So, living skills, learning how to plan ahead, save. Don't get 13 credit cards, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And don't get addicted to shopping.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Get what you need, not what you want. Yes, we want this. And I've been there. I've been in a stage where I was young and foolish and I'd buy anything that I liked. Then I run out of money to pay for the rent or pay for groceries or pay for this, pay for that. You have to learn balance and also learn the value of money. And foremost, you pay for your dwelling. Foremost, that you are comfortable, that you have a place to sleep, you know, and knowing that you don't have to be worried about, where am I going to sleep tonight? That's the foremost, I think, living skills that the young people need to learn not to depend on their parents so much. They have to learn to, number one, work. And that's where Manaj comes in. They taught us how to go to sleep. There was a certain time we went to sleep, certain time we got up, went to go eat, clean up our rooms, go to school. It was structured. And I really thank the school system, Manaj, for teaching us the work ethics. I think that's, it automatically went to, we learned that, and that was good. We learned it from Manaj from high school. Mm-hmm. Wherever we went to school, we learned structure. And that's really good. You have to learn to have the work ethics of don't depend on your grandma to wake you up. Mm-hmm. You're old enough, you're an adult, mm-hmm. you have to learn, you know. It's something common sense. You have to be adults. You're going out in the adult world. Your mom's not going to wake you up. Your uncle, your dad, or whoever, your sister is not going to wake you up. You have to learn that yourself. And it's going to be hard at first, but like I said, that school, Manaj Kam, taught us that, and it was good. Once we were graduated, we went out and started working. Or we went out and went to business college or whatever. And one of the things that I experienced personally, I drank excessively, and I lost I was very smart. I know I was. I had the ability to go on college and learn a lot. But one of the drawbacks that I want every young person to know is that alcohol and drugs have no room when you have to pursue in getting your degrees. Absolutely no room. It just brings pain, a broken wrist, and you have to go home, and it doesn't help at all. Absolutely doesn't. And you spend your money unwisely, you know, where you could have bought something nice for yourself, you end up blowing away the money for alcohol and drugs. So keep going to college, get your degrees, get your master, take really good care of yourself. That's what I want to share to young people, learning how to live out there by yourself. You can do it. But at the same time, it's okay. Like, I need help, you know. Learning to do that, it's good. And also learning the resources of where you can get help. Either financially, maybe your corporations, or whoever you... Even the oil companies are willing to donate if that's what you want to do. Pursue something and don't be afraid to ask for help.
Of these, of the values that you just talked about, is there any major changes that you see, maybe with the young people in Barrow or with the young people that you see now? Are there lots of changes, like with respect for elders and young people not being able to get out there and get jobs or just being lazy.
They're too engrossed in the TV. They're too engrossed in the games. There's better things to do than, you know. And the parents are allowing that, and they're spoiling them. They're not teaching them at an early age the value of money. There's too many, the young people are getting too materialistic, and that's not good. They have to be taught what's right and what's wrong. Some are latchkey kids, both parents are working, and that's not an excuse. Both parents might be working, but the kid knows what's right and what's wrong, you know? So the kids nowadays, the changes, they're in a really confusing world nowadays. Don't go to a situation where you will feel shame and guilt. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Just walk away. There's different lifestyles that are different things that is just so unbelievable. Don't get involved in where your spirit is where you can't feel anymore. You have to respect yourself and respect others, and don't steal, don't lie, and don't hurt anybody. Foremost, don't hurt yourself where you get into a situation where it's very shameful and, you know, you feel so guilty. Why go there, you know? You can avoid it. You're an adult. You're able to make choices, the right choices. Make the right choice, and it'll be good. You won't have the heartaches of thinking so much, why did I do that, you know? Common sense, avoid it. Avoid what is wrong. But there's always a good side too. You are going to college. Lots of young people are. So we have to look at the good side. So what you're doing, you're creating a, like, wow, if my aunt, if my cousin can do it, I can do it. You know, there's a little girl, little boy out there that's watching you. Or even kids in school, you know, and they ask you, and you say, I'm going to college. You say, wow, that's wonderful. That is so, you're a role model. Don't give up.
What are some of the, go ahead. What are some of the, you say that, you know, there's a lot of good, there's a good side to it also. You know, students going to college and getting diplomas and degrees. So what are some of your hopes for, I mean, your culture? And now that you see this optimistic, this positive side of growing into the university, what's your hopes, your sort of dreams for the young people?
I hope that they learn their family tree, like to know about themselves, feel really good about themselves, and to learn their dances. Keep learning them, and also teach the little kids. Like that, like it's been going on from generation to generation that our elders taught this to us, so we're teaching it to you. It's just an ongoing, a beautiful cycle, generation to generation, and keeping it alive. And that my hope is that they learn how to understand and speak their own languages. If somebody from somewhere can learn to speak Japanese or Spanish, why not your own language? There's no room for like, my mom and dad didn't teach me. I said, that's not an excuse. You can learn. Yeah.
A lot of different cultures, Native American, are afraid that their traditions are getting lost and their language is getting lost. And a lot of them are. Do you think that the same is with the Nubiak culture?
We're not going to let it die. It's up to us to encourage and also to speak to our grandchildren the language. Speak to them. Speak to them, speak to them. Even if they don't understand, keep talking to them. They'll get it. They'll know.
My grandma and my grandpa went to Mount Edgecombe too. And
who?
Martha. Well, Martha Malavansky is my aunt.
Mm-hmm. I know some Malavansky.
Rachel Lestenkopf?
Lestenkopf? I knew some Lestenkopf.
Yeah.
What year did they graduate?
I don't remember.
56?
It was the...
Earliest?
It was in the 50s, the early 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we were the latter 60s. We're the 60s.
Oh.
We're called the baby
boomers. Baby boomers, yeah. My mom's a baby boomer, so my grandma, when she went, it was early 50s.
Yeah.
Maybe. But when they went, after that, they didn't feel comfortable going back home. My grandma and my grandpa met each other there. And then, they were from two different places, you know, in Alaska, but they didn't feel like they could go back home because they had lost some of their culture and their language. And so Mount Edgecombe has done a lot of great things, but do you think that at the same time it's sort of making things more difficult in keeping culture?
Mm-hmm. And it sure did, because we were total English in the school. Total English. And when we went home, we automatically started speaking in English. And from then on, we just kept talking in English, and we raised kids in English, and we never had the opportunity to teach them, talk to them in our language, and that was a downfall. One of my biggest regrets is never talking to my kids in our language, ever since they were babies, ever since, you know, it's our mother language. Yeah, Mount Edgecombe had a lot to do with affecting, totally devastated, or it's even devastating right now. My kids sure wish they could understand us when we start speaking in Eskimo, and they can't. That's their pain, their hurt, you could see in their faces.
Mm-hmm. Is there something happening? Are there immersion programs? Or
yes.
And is that in Barrow too?
Mm-hmm. Yes. There's immersion programs at the Ile Salle College. There's nuclear classes being taught, and that's good. That's very good.
My grandma now doesn't speak her language anymore, and my grandpa didn't ever with us, or my mom. They moved to Chicago.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. But then they came back and they just stayed in Anchorage, and they
But that doesn't mean we can't learn. There's curriculum, first year grammar curriculum in school. We can learn. You can learn to understand Inupiaqua, your language. Asking questions, and don't be afraid to say, I want to learn my language. And you're doing something really good about keeping your dances alive. That's good. That's very good.
All the questions that I had about the values, and you know, we talked a little bit about school and what you want to pass on to young people. Is there anything else you want to add?
I think I touched on it earlier about common sense, money management. Just don't go overboard just because you have a credit card. Doesn't mean you can buy the whole world. Common sense, a credit card, they charge you so much, 20%, you know. My advice to young people, stay away from credit cards. Save first. Have a nest egg. Just in case of emergencies, you could have that money available. Common sense, just save and forget about it, you know. And work hard, and you wouldn't go wrong, or you'll have retirement every month. Free money, is that what they call it? Work hard. Don't be idle, don't be lazy. And work in one place if you can. Or if it has the same retirement system, stay there.
Mm.
Yeah, try and maintain the same retirement system. It works out pretty good like that.
Mm. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.